Radio, CIUT 89.5, the sound of your city.
The views and opinions expressed on the following program are those of the producers and or the persons appearing on the program and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of CIUT FM.
Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, and of course, we are in the time of corona, which changes everybody's life and which requires new behavior by us and creative behavior. We have a lot of problems to solve. We're faced with massive unemployment. We're faced with workers being sent into jobs where they're not adequately equipped, and they're expected to carry out this heroic work at miserable wages and at great risk. We need to talk about these things. I'm going to, in lieu of music, I read you something which seems appropriate to me. Some Bertolt Brecht, who else? A worker reads history. Who built the Seven Gates of Thebes? The books are filled with names of kings. Was it kings who hauled the craggy blocks of stone? And Babylon, so many times destroyed, who built the city up each time? In which of Lima's houses, that city glittering with gold, lived those who built it? In the evenings, when the Chinese wall was finished, where did the masons go? Imperial Rome is full of arcs of triumph. Who reared them up? Over whom did the Caesars triumph? Byzantium lives in song. Were all her dwellings palaces? And even in Atlantis, of the legend, the night the sea rushed in, the drowning men still bellowed for their slaves. Young Alexander conquered India. He alone? Caesar beat the Gauls. Was there not even a cook in his army? Philip of Spain wept as his fleet was sunk and destroyed. Were there no other tears? Frederick the Great triumphed in a 7 years' war. Who triumphed with him? Each page a victory. At whose expense the victory ball? Every 10 years a great man. Who paid the piper? So many particulars. So many questions. And this is the Taylor Report, and we're going to talk about this matter of labor. The word solidarity should be on everybody's lips, and of course around the world it is, actually. And we've had some, I think, inspiring examples of solidarity, and we've also been seeing scenes in which workers have been having to act on their own because of the kind of conditions they're faced with. When I say on their own, I'm not demeaning unions. Unions do what they can, but not all of these workers, of course, who face these situations in meatpacking or care for the elderly. Not everybody's organized. And also, there's a lot of fighting has to go on in the moment because questionable decisions are made, and those who own the place always think that they have sway, and people have to make decisions. I read today that since March the 1st, there have been 170 strikes, walkouts, work stoppages. I suspect most of those are spontaneous. Across the United States, and we've had similar conditions here in Canada. And this past Saturday, the 9th, there was a car cavalcade organized by Green Jobs Oshawa. And it was I'm going to call it a honking car cavalcade. They made a lot of noise. They made a good tour of some of the places where there are organized workers, particularly in healthcare. And then I think they gathered at the General Motors car plant, now deceased. A speech was given there, and I happen to have it in my hands. And it goes this way, Green Jobs Oshawa Statement, a Worker Solidarity Cavalcade, May 9th, 2020. And the speech was given by Tony Leah of the Green Jobs Oshawa, and of course he is Unifor, once employed there at that plant, now closed. Welcome everyone. It's a great turnout, and we thank you for coming. We are here to support our frontline workers. Those workers don't need applause. They don't need medals. What do they need? They need personal protection equipment, PPE. They need N95 masks. And those masks can and must be manufactured here in the massive, mostly empty GM assembly complex behind me. Let's review the facts. There's a shortage of N95 masks. Quotes, federal government tracking shows that of the 155.4 million N95 masks Ottawa has ordered, 5.3 million, that's of 155 million, have arrived, and a significant portion remain in testing. The government's website says, that's from the Globe and Mail, April 30, 2020. In a recent survey of doctors by the Canadian Medical Association, 71% said the supply of PPE was worse or unchanged from 1 month before. CTV News, April 28, 2020. Number two, the results of the shortage are devastating. The Ontario Council of Hospital Unions, CUPE, has revealed the number of Ontario healthcare workers infected with COVID-19 rose from 2016 on April 27 to 2,892 on May 5. That is an increase of an alarming 43.5% in just 8 days. Today, more than 3,000 Ontario healthcare workers are infected with COVID-19. Think about that. 3,000 of our frontline healthcare workers have been infected. 3,000. Five have died. Those on the healthcare front lines now account for nearly 16% of the province's COVID cases. That is an infection rate four times that of China. Our governments are not protecting them. On April 24, we had the announcement by the Canadian government that GM will use 50 to 60 workers to make surgical masks in Oshawa. No N95 masks are to be manufactured. This work is not beginning until May 11. Why so little, so late? Well, the timeline is the Ontario government declared an emergency on March 17, the day of the first death in Ontario. The Canadian government issued a call to action on March 20. I might have said March 17, and call to action on March 20, calling for companies to manufacture needed equipment. But there has been no orders to corporations, no national planning, no coordination. If our governments can mandate workers and remove their collective bargaining rights, they can mandate corporations to meet public needs. Dismayed by the lack of action, on April 5, Green Jobs Oshawa sent an open letter to Prime Minister Trudeau. It included this sentence: "We are seeing the consequences of not having manufacturing capacity in Canada when the government of the U.S. threatens to prevent delivery of N95 masks manufactured there." Close quote. When the April 24 announcement came, it still did not include N95 masks. Why so late? From March 20, the call to action, to April 24 is 5 weeks. Call to action, 5 weeks. From April 24 to May 11 is another 2.5 weeks. That is 7.5 weeks just to set up mask manufacturing by 50 workers. In contrast, pay attention, in contrast, China built 2 complete hospitals with over 1,000 beds each from the ground up in less than 2 weeks. They were completed February 6th. Is our government taking this crisis seriously enough? Seriously enough? Why so little? General Motors is manufacturing 3 million masks per month in Warren, Michigan. A Warren, Michigan plant with 140 workers, both surgical masks and N95 masks. GM's plans for Oshawa, barely more than one-third the number of workers, one-third the number of masks, and no N95 masks. 50 to 60 workers, when there are 5,000 assembly and supplier workers whose jobs were taken away by General Motors when they ended vehicle production here. Mass production will occupy 30,000 square feet out of 10 million square feet, 3 by 10 of 1%, 3/10 of 1%. If GM can manufacture N95 masks in Warren, they can manufacture them in Oshawa, Canada. They must manufacture them in Ottawa. They must manufacture them in Oshawa. We need to take this crisis seriously. During World War II, the Canadian government ordered industries to convert to necessary war production, including the GM Oshawa plant. Canada lost 42,000 lives in World War II, about 20 deaths per day for the 2,065 days Canada was at war until VE Day. Canada has so far had 4,700 deaths from COVID-19 in 61 days. That is 75 deaths per day. For the past 2 weeks, there have been 150 deaths per day. Today, the number of COVID-19 deaths in Canada exceeded the death toll in China, a country with 40 times the population. Are our political leaders taking this crisis seriously enough? They are not doing enough to protect Canadians. They are not doing enough to protect our frontline workers. The support is appreciated. We appreciate the support for this campaign that we have received from the DRLC, the LEAP, OCHU, QP, OFL, Nikki Ashton, Jennifer French, the Council of Canadians, Councillor John Neal, who is with us again today, and many others in the community and across the province. and the country. Unifor Local 222 Executive Board and the Local 222 Retired Workers Chapter Executive passed motions to, quote, endorse the Green Jobs Oshawa Cavalcade that is supporting frontline healthcare workers and pressuring GM to produce far more masks, especially the N95 masks in Oshawa. We cannot rest until we have enough PPE being manufactured in this country for this crisis and for the next one. Manufacture N95 masks in Oshawa. Make essential medical production in Oshawa permanent. Make a Crown Corporation to ensure that we have a secure supply of critically important products for the future. That's a statement read Saturday afternoon in Oshawa at a car cavalcade, honking cars. I understand there were 65 cars, and that's a lot. And that's the kind of message that has to be sent out. This is the kind of work that has to be done. We're going to have to be, everybody's going to have to be creative. We're in a situation where you can see, and it's being driven from Washington, where the oligarchs who dominate our society have decided that it's time for the wage slaves to go back to work. And they intend to make it coercive in the sense that, well, you guys are all unemployed and you will do as we say. And yes, there are safety concerns, but we've already decided that we can call a few people. We're in this really hideous situation where, instead of tackling in a scientific way with medical professionals giving, let's put it this way, following the advice of medical professionals, that a protocol be developed. And there was one, and is one, developed by the World Health Organization, which said you have to test, you have to isolate those who are positive, and you have to separate those who put their fellow community members at risk. You have to put them in a cared for place and where they can receive medical care. And you have to trace anybody who's been in contact. This is a lot of work. But if you have a society, if you have a common goal of serving all the people, all humans, you recognize that if one is sick, all are at risk. And if you understand that, then you follow the guidelines that will achieve success and minimize loss and eventually defeat the COVID-19. But if you operate on another principle, and I cite President Assad of Syria, who is a socialist, he says, well, you know, the fact is, what we're seeing is that the capitalist class of the West, the imperialists, they don't really care about their own people. That the idea that, okay, well, we just say, we'll lose that many people. The problem, by the way, with that cavalier attitude is they don't know how many people they're talking about. And as the White House is finding out, it might end up being themselves. Whether that'll sober them up is a question. At this point, it comes to mind, by the way, that again, Washington is driving this. And don't let anybody kid you, Canada is going to go along, because when Washington says open, Canada's going to say open. And already they're playing this game of here's a governor, there's a governor, and allowing this to become a competitive thing, very, you know, what they call a race to the bottom. And you can begin to wonder about the sort of end game of their own ideology. I'm reminded of Madeleine Albright, who wasn't at Albright, who said that America is the indispensable country on the earth. Another expression for exceptional country. And you know, I get the impression that the indispensable country is getting ready to dispense with itself. This kind of conduct, irrational, is some sort of idea that repeating the words, we're number one, or we're the most powerful, actually translates into anything. Powerful at what? There are now, I can say confidently, 80,000 dead Americans. And the numbers are going to keep coming. 80,000. This is number one. This is the exceptional country, the one that Obama says, I believe in every fiber in my being, that in American exceptionalism. Well, it's beginning to play out in a way maybe he didn't envision, because there is something very exceptional going on, where there are more than a million Americans with the Corona-19 and 80,000 dead, and they've decided on a kind of attack that they will blame a country, and so they name that country, of course, China. China has 1.4 billion people. This is May 2020. And China's death from Corona-19 is under 5,000. And because they locked down the city of Wuhan and brought in 40,000 doctors and nurses and all kinds of medical gear. And by the way, from around the world, including Canada, there was assistance to them. And they were very grateful, and they thanked Canada, they thanked Italy, they thanked Cuba. But they tackled it, and particularly on the matter of tracing, of saying, look, this is, we have to identify the locations of where, who has it. And they had an aggressive program where they would identify individuals, and Tony Lea's speech indicated they built special hospitals which to take them and to treat them and to see that they would recover, and then they traced contacts. You know, I saw on CNN only today there's starting to be this discussion of, you know, we have to do tracing. This is May. They were doing this. China, who's now, in American view, the villain, China was doing this in January. And it wasn't a secret. We had a doctor, a Canadian doctor, Aylward, who is a member of the World Health Organization leadership. He's a virologist. And he's given very nice interviews where he explained how that was done. And it involved this key element of tracing. But that was January, February. I think he went there in early February. I'm not absolutely sure. It was a long time ago. And so he was there with the World Health Organization, and he was bringing back lessons. Okay, here's what I learned. He's a Canadian virologist. He knows what he's doing. And he says, okay, here's what we've learned. Now, the idea would be, Canada, U.S., to apply that. But now I'm reading that in California, they've decided to recruit late April, early May, recruit librarians, some retired, some, you know, who are not able to work in the libraries today. Because I like this. They said, because they're nice people, and they know how to do research, I like all that. That's brilliant. But this is a long time. By the end of April, China had actually reduced to zero the new cases. When they report new cases, and today they're saying, oh, there's been a spike in Canada, in China, a spike. Want to hear what the spike is? 14 cases. Believe me, they're on it. They're on it. As a New York councilman said, you know, Wuhan had 9,000 detectives, disease detectives. I would call these people trace, except they're even more professional. 9,000. New York City, he says, had 100. Said, look, Trump and Governor Cuomo, you want to know why you have all these bodies? You don't have that. And you didn't tackle it with the same vigor. And you were given all this time. But we're speaking, this is in a context of a fighting a pandemic, cooperating around the world, and a key element is that we have to have peace, we have to have cooperative relations between states in order to have success. But that goes against the wishes of the White House. And I really don't believe there's a lot of difference. We're seeing a kind of a liberal game being played where they say, well, you know, the Democrats have taken, I mentioned Albright a while ago. Albright has said, now is not the time to talk about China. I got news for you, Albright. You don't have a case, so just shut up about now is not the time. Just say what needs to be said. We're not at war with China. We don't have a basis to be making a case. What we have is a common problem in which China and Cuba and other states of the world, Iran, Venezuela, if you want to throw in all the others, Italy, France, they want to cooperate. They want to do it under the World Health Organization. But in the U.S., you have the Democrats who say, well, we'll get them later. What a peculiar attitude. I saw a CBC interview. It was Craven with Samantha Powers. And for some reason, the CBC thought they should talk to Samantha Powers. And she actually was just an absolute study in dirty politics, dirty criminal liberal capitalist politics. The question was, well, you know, what about this China thing? She'd, oh, there's no question about it. You know, China's very bad. And they always throw in a word like evil and such. But she said, but you know, we have to, you know, at the moment, we have to be tackling the issue of the pandemic, and therefore Trump is really not showing the way. And the CBC interviewer said, well, you know, of course, about being critical of China. And Samantha says, well, we have to be critical, you know, we have to go after it. But we have to know how to do it. And the CBC interviewer said, it's kind of a problem, isn't it, for us? Because they are giving us a lot of stuff. We're getting a lot of stuff. And Samantha, of course, said, yeah, well, you know, handle that. You know, that's part of, you know, the skill of a diplomat, etc. It's just Craven. And which is why we have to say, we're not going to play the game. We're not going to allow a new Cold War. We're not going to allow that Trump take the lead and Canada follow along. We have to worry about our safety. The pandemic is dangerous enough, but the road that Washington is following, and again, I'm going to keep repeating, Democrats, Republicans, the road they're taking is an adversarial one, which can lead to terrible things. And don't kid yourself about this. There is a tendency to talk about that this is election season. And I saw a commentator today I've had enough respect for him. He intended well. But he was, his line was, by the way, he was on Chinese television, which, and they do produce excellent programming. He was an American authority. But he said, well, you know, you have to understand that this, when it's election time, the Americans tend to compete with each other over, you know, over China. It's historically they've done this. We all know they did it with Russia, but it, in fact, actually, it's much more common that they do it with China. And he said, so this is election season, so, you know, in other words, words are one thing, acts maybe another. I'm afraid I don't really go into, I don't believe that. I saw a report in Black Agenda Report, I think it was Danny Heifel, I think he's right. This is a little more serious than that, and because it's overall policy of the U.S. to encircle China. And remember, the U.S. has 800 military bases around the world, and they have a, and they, under Obama, they created this new basketball expression they wanted to use, which is, we have to pivot towards China, which, that's talking, that's basically confrontation talk. Recently, Canadian warships sailed in the Taiwan Straits, that's between Taiwan and China, where they didn't belong. That's a warship sailing in Chinese waters. Of course, they were following a larger American ship. That's the way small dogs behave with big. And Australia, I think, sent a boat too, because this is part of the game they play. But we want to remember too that the United States and Canada and Australia fought with China in the Korean War. And that was a bloody, racist, ugly war. It was in Korea where now we have a situation where North Korea is even more able to defend itself. But the U.S. doesn't, has not backed off an aggressive strategy. That's why we have to underline this for workers in Canada, that they should be thinking about this, because they're going to be told that they have an enemy in China when there is no such enemy at all. Just as they don't have an enemy in Cuba, and they don't have an enemy in Venezuela. And which leads to the issue of sanctions. This past weekend, at the United Nations, a motion was brought to calling, endorsing in the Secretary General's call for a ceasefire, so as to enable those countries that are fighting, not only do they have battles going on in their country, but they need, they have Corona 19. That seems like a, I would think that people talk about humanitarianism, and they used to, by the way, you don't hear about it, humanitarian intervention, that seems to be a little quieter about that, but that's still the game plan. But anyhow, you would think that that would pass easily, Security Council, but the United States blocked it because it didn't have wording condemning, or calling on, rather, we may as well call it condemning, calling on the World Health Organization to be more transparent. That's what the United States wanted. That's how they killed this Security Council resolution to try to reduce violence in the world so that humanity could take on and continue its struggle to end the pandemic, which threatens us all, but particularly threatens the poorest and the poorer countries. So that one went down. And meanwhile, the U.S., of course, is doubling its sanctions on countries such as Iran and Venezuela, Syria, So things, steps are being taken, and we need to know about them, and because these are the right steps. We have to have a common fight, and we have to go after the parliamentarians on this. And the Sanctions Kill Coalition had a webinar, that's new for me, coalition webinar, and that was on Saturday, May 9, 4 o'clock. Here's who spoke there. From the sanctioned countries, the Ana Rodriguez Abascal, Charge Affairs of the Cuban Mission to the United Nations, spoke. Dr. Frank Guni of Zimbabwe, ZANU PF North America, spoke. Francisco Campbell of Nicaragua, ambassador to the United States, spoke. Remember, Nicaragua is still under sanctions. Syria, Dr. Bashar Jafari, he's the ambassador to the United Nations. There was a spokesman from Venezuela, Carlos J. Ron Martinez. He's the vice minister of foreign affairs, and there was a speaker added, Majid Takht Ravanchi, Iranian ambassador to the United Nations. Good for them. And it says the U.S. has imposed economic sanctions against 39 countries. In many cases, this denies them access to medicine, medical equipment, as well as access to world markets for food and other necessities. During the coronavirus crisis, the U.S., with the highest death count in the world, has upped the sanctions against countries like Iran and Venezuela, and has tried to weaponize COVID-19, to bring down governments that will not follow the dictates of Washington and Wall Street. The UN has asked that sanctions be loosened during this crisis, but the U.S. has done the opposite. Many U.S. allies have broken with them and sent medical aid to some of these countries. Now is an important time for the people in the U.S. to come out strongly against these sanctions, which are simply war by other means. Well, I'm really glad they had that meeting. I urge people to that's available at the iacenter.org. They spell center, E-R. The iacenter.org. Go there, and I would urge you to find out what those ambassadors had to say. I want to say I'm also glad, it's particularly that Zimbabwe is mentioned, because I think there's a lot of racism that tends to, people have sort of cherry pick what they like. They say, oh, well, I like that guy, but I don't know what I think of that one. And when you look at the bottom of the list, they tend to put Zimbabwe there. And I said it on the program, I probably said it last week, I'm sorry if this wearies you. Zimbabwe is a country with, it does have great natural wealth, but Tony Blair and the U.S. decided to sanction and punish and block and harm Zimbabwe at every turn. And all across Africa, you have a very highly developed political culture. I traveled a great deal there. I worked at the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda, in Tanzania. I was in Kenya a lot. I traveled to Burkina Faso, to Ouagadougou and Dadougou, and I was in Cote d'Ivoire and Ghana. Kenya, I already mentioned, and Zambia. I found there was strong respect for Robert Mugabe. Robert Mugabe led, after all, a struggle against the apartheid system of Rhodesia, and succeeded. That's why he's being punished. Like Haiti is still being punished for having a revolution and freeing the slaves. There is in the DNA of imperialism a nasty, cruel streak. We're seeing this. Of course, Now the Americans are tasting that cruel streak because it's coming to them through the policies of out of Washington. But I'll tell you something, the World Health Organization nominated Robert Mugabe several years ago, when he was still with us, to be their ambassador, the goodwill ambassador for the African countries at the part of the World Health Organization. The imperialists all said, nay, no, not now, can't do it. And so he wasn't appointed. Africa didn't have, that was their nominee. The African countries, South Africa didn't object. They didn't think that was a bad idea, but the white Europeans did, so we didn't get them. We didn't get Robert Mugabe in that position. The present president, the spokesman, don't know his actual title. I call him Tedros. He's from Ethiopia. People want to go into, you know, him. Well, he's the African choice to be there, and that should be honored and respected. And he has received a lot of racial abuse. People don't know that, or they don't seem to care. It's fairly significant and ought to be noted, because we are having a debate about which way to go here. So this, I'll remind you, this is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm sorry, I don't have music, and I'm doing a report and commentary. I think I'm reporting. I told you about the labor demonstration and about the Green Jobs Oshawa. That's reporting. And of course, on these numbers that we're learning about COVID-19 and about the decision coming, and it's driven by Washington to say, okay, the oligarchs are getting impatient. It's time for you folks to go back to work under conditions that we will set up for you, whether you like it or not. And which brings me to Canada's role in all this. And there's a couple of places we've got to talk about. Let's start with Venezuela. There's been an adventure coup. And a weak attempt. We don't know quite what it was, but we do know the U.S. Special Forces have elements, former, they always say former. By the way, the Americans are supposed to arrest people in U.S. who get involved in these criminal activities, and they are criminal, landing armed men on the beaches of Venezuela with, according to the leader, plan to somehow, their goal was to kidnap Maduro and take him, I guess, and throw him at the feet of Trump and Pence for a reward. That would be among the things, but also to bring about an overthrow of the Venezuelan government, which is a crime. So these Americans were there doing this. And I want to know something. We have a House Health, Commons Health Committee that wants to summon a Canadian doctor because they don't like something he said about, or didn't say, about Taiwan. And the Globe gives it all coverage, and the Star is starting to give it coverage. And this is considered a big deal. We're going to come back to that point. But where is the Commons Committee that wants to know why the Prime Minister this year sat down with Juan Guaido, whose name is on a document in which he is agreeing to pay mercenaries sums of money to carry out acts of violence inside Venezuela with generals, former generals of the Venezuelan army, and their names are on the contract. Their names are there. And one of them has said out loud, yes, I signed that contract. That was me. This is a former Venezuelan general. So where is the Commons Committee that wants to know why Canada continues to call Guaido the president? And why do we have are involved with the Lima Group, which has this classic skulking imperialist policy of saying, oh, We want to see a change of government in Venezuela. We recognize Guaido. This is Canada. We recognize Guaido, but we want a peaceful resolution of things. And therefore, you can't get mad at us, even though we're just a faction of the South American states. Mexico's not doesn't agree with this. Argentina doesn't agree with this. So there's a lot of countries don't agree with this policy. But dirty little Lima, led by, it was established by Chrystia Freeland and Bolsonaro, the guy who had a soft coup in Brazil, locked up Lula, locked up and removed the former president, a woman, an outstanding woman. So, but their little game is to say, well, we're for peaceful things and we don't want to see violence, even though when they ran down to the border there with the president of Virgin Airways, what's his name, Branson, and tried to create a violent confrontation right away, Lima said, well, we're with them. The Lima group, we want to see the Venezuela has to let Mr. Branson and his pals cross the border, all this malarkey. At any rate, okay, now wait a minute. So now U.S. former Special Forces guys with Venezuelan mercenaries from outside the country have shown up with weapons and they've been captured. And there's a document that says that they were going to carry out a violent overthrow of Maduro. So where is the Commons Committee that wants to know why Canada is recognizing Guaido? Why are we participating in this exercise? Because that's what it is. It is a flanking operation. It's a political flanking where some guys do the gun work and other guys do the mealy-mouth stuff. And Canada is doing the mealy-mouth stuff. But I understand why. Where is the enthusiasm in the House of Commons? Don't they have a committee? And there must be some kind of committee would want to know why Canada is hosting. He practically sat in Trudeau's lap and he said, oh, this is the president of Venezuela. He's not the president. Actually, Venezuela is a member of the United Nations. Maduro is the president of Venezuela. They have a democracy. There are opposition parties. And of course, people like Freeland or others, you can quibble if you like, but that is the recognized sovereign government of Venezuela. And it is under sanctions by the United States, harming a people, trying to deprive them of an economy, laughing at their problems. And here you have a guy who you say you recognize him, and he's the one who has been hiring mercenaries. Now, wait a minute. You could say, we don't think that that's true. He denies it. Good. How about a Commons Committee to find out? How about a little, what's that word? Transparency. How about the transparency? Let's see if what they were doing. Don't you want to see the document? Don't you want to? You could call the general. He's sitting in the U.S. You could call him up. You could do one of your Zoom interviews with him if you want. The committee could do that. But they're not doing anything. Instead, we're all going along with this dirty regime change game. That's with Venezuela. And now look at this. The Sunday Star, Toronto, says, here's the headline. Canada joins diplomatic effort for Taiwan to be granted observer status at the WHO. And it says, health organization has faced criticism for reluctance to anger China. Anybody ever tried to say anything like, well, here's the deal. I'll come to my question. Here's the deal. They say that now it's Mr. Champagne. He's the man. And he said, yes, over the weekend, we would like to see Taiwan be part of the World Health Organization. Why are they doing that? That's because the U.S. has decided that they're gonna play the Taiwan card. This is an old game with the U.S. They've been playing Taiwan card for a long, long time. And Canada knows that Taiwan is not a state. The United Nations, which is, of course, the from which the World Health Organization is part of the United Nations, and to be in the World Health Organization, you have to be a state. But they, Canada now says, oh, we'd like it to be an observer. And of course, look who we're joining. We're joining Australia. This actually first was reported. It wasn't first reported by here in Canada. It was first reported by good old Australia at the Sydney Morning Herald mentioned Canada as a country involved in the pro-Taiwan coalition. The pro-Taiwan coalition. This is interesting. And who would this be? And I'm going to read some of it. And this is our foreign minister. Canada continues to support Taiwan's meaningful participation in international multicultural fora, where the presence provides important contributions to the public good, Champagne said. We believe that Taiwan's role as a non-state observer in the World Health Organization meetings is in the interests of the international health community and is important to the global fight against the pandemic. And then it says a senior government official speaking on condition of anonymity because of the sensitivity of the situation said the démarche was issued jointly on Thursday by the Geneva-based ambassadors of Canada, Australia, France, Germany, New Zealand, Britain, Japan, and the U.S., with the envoys from Washington and Tokyo taking the lead. Tokyo, hey, that's interesting. Tokyo, we're marking the end of World War II. Tokyo had a role in the war. The country with the third highest casualties in the war was China, and those casualties were caused by the Japanese invaders. That war began in 1937 and it fought until 1945. So, well, let's see who they are. Well, it's Australia, Canada, France, Germany, and New Zealand, and Britain. Okay, let's get cut to the chase. In other words, it's a gang. This is the old Five Eyes. And Five Eyes is not a made-up word. The Taylor Report didn't create this. Five Eyes is that group which is driving the confrontation, an adversarial, destructive approach to the world order at the moment. We have it in the UN, and we have the World Health Organization, but Five Eyes doesn't like that. And Five Eyes are, of course, English-speaking, white, imperial and colonial, and some people like to use the word former colonial powers. They're not former, they're all colonial powers. And of course, then there's the NATO gang that they know that they can pull in their wake. This is not at all the world. People like to use the word international community. The international community is dead against this. And incidentally, you take a vote anywhere, you're going to lose, all you guys, all you wise guys, all you troublemakers. You're going to lose. But you go forward anyway. Because you don't know anything else to do, because you have the idea that you make trouble, and then if they resist you, then you move and you find another target, you make trouble, you build bases, and you see if you can control, dominate the world. And they say so themselves. I don't know why, we're number one, to quote Joe Biden. He said to China, he said to Trump, here's what I would say to China, we have to come into your country. You have to open up. Well, that's what Admiral Dewey said when he arrived in Tokyo. That's what the Americans said when they, you know, went after China early 20th century, at the end of the 19th. We have to come in your country. Well, the answer is no, actually. You're not going to come in. Get lost. But we have to ask ourselves, why are we part of this? I said last week on the show, we're at that fork in the road. We can go with the rest of the world. It's quite happy to have us. There's no problem. The Chinese policy, this is a fact, is not an adversarial policy. It is a policy of multilateralism. Other countries are in the world, and they're in the United Nations, and they are your equal. Whether you think you're exceptional or whether you think you're indispensable, that's your opinion. But the international organization, which was founded on the corpse of Nazism and of Japanese imperialism, it was founded the idea we're not going to have diktat by people who think they're racially superior or superior because they conquered places and destroyed cultures and languages. We're not going to have that world anymore. We're going to have a world of mutual respect, and in which the hand of friendship is held out between states, and differences are resolved through diplomacy and mutual interest. And that's what the UN concept is. The World Health Organization is a reflection of that. That's why the non-aligned movement and the Group of 77 and countries like Iran and Cuba and Syria belong to the World Health Organization. Because it's theirs. And Trump is mad. And Trudeau has been instructed to become mad too. Because it actually tends to permit other countries than the Five Eyes gang and NATO to be heard and to help direct policy, because the humanity, the great overwhelming majority of humanity are not Five Eyes members. I want to make sure at the end of World War II, there was an Iron Curtain speech given by Winston Churchill. And he proposed that there be an Anglo-American empire. And he named Canada, by the way, so if you want to be a member, that he called on Canada to be there. He even claimed, by the way, in the middle of that speech that Canada had a nuclear weapon, which I'm sure everybody faint dead away to find that out, but he said it. I'm sure they don't. Americans would never allow Canada to have a nuclear weapon. But at any rate, he called for an Anglo-American empire because of our values. You've heard about, you know, our values. Christian Freeland every once in a while mentions it. Here's those values. It's a world would be led by Britain and United States. As you know, amongst English-speaking people, America is the prodigal son. They once talked back to the royal family, but they're all together now, and the son owns the place. And he has bad habits. But they all follow along. But that was Churchill, and that's what he said. And he was answered by the leaders of the Soviet Union, and they said, hey, we just fought a war with a guy who had the idea that there were superior people. We fought that concept, and we crushed it. So knock it off. Don't start that talk again. But here we are back. Going to play little games about Taiwan, which is part of China. And the games, I can remember when Jack Kennedy was debating Nixon, and they were debating which one would be the toughest in China. That's how bad it is and how long this has been going on. It's always the same game. So it is crucial that we wake up to this danger. Hey, this has been the Taylor Report. It is CIUT, and it's always time to contribute to CIUT. Thanks for listening, and we'll be with you next week.
It's that time again. Love your radio. Please support the sound and news of your city, heard each and every day on CIUT 89.5 FM. We are your voice and your radio station. Visit CIUT.FM and donate now. Thank you in advance for your financial support.